The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 530. It's the 12th of July, 2016. On the podcast today, I have CEO of Savannah Resources, David Archer. That's S-A-V. Talks about their latest board appointments, which is very good for the company, very positive move. And also, he goes through three reasons why you, should add them to your Vox Markets watch list. And if I were you, I'd add them to your watch list. A very interesting company, and some positive developments could be happening, I think, if it goes David's way, which I think is good. He's got a loyal fan base, loyal shareholder register here at Savannah. So I'm just saying, you know, have a listen, see what you think. Also on the podcast, Eric Hinow, that's Chief Executive Officer of Concepta Medical Diagnostics, which was just been acquired by Frontier for just over £3 million. So it'll be changing its name from FRI Frontier to Concepta, which is CPT ticker. Also on the podcast, market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about one significant data point that could move the markets this week. Also, today's penny stock with potential, suggested by Liam, is Union Jack All, UJL. I'll go through the reasons why Liam's picked that later. And I also have the broker buys and sells. There are four buys today, I think. Four? Five. No sells. Sorry, six buys, no sells. I'll cover those in a bit.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Savannah Resources. That's SAV. Current price, 3.45 pence. Market cap around 13.3 million. It's David Archer. Thank you for joining me, David.
Good morning, Justin.
Morning. Some exciting news. We'll come to that in a bit. But before we do that, can you just give a brief reminder to what you're all about for new investors or new listeners to the podcast, please?
Sure. Savannah Resources, market cap of around about £12 million. AIM listed. We've got three major points of focus. The first being in Oman with our copper projects there. The second in Mozambique with a joint venture with Rio Tinto over the very large Matamba mineral sands project in eastern Africa, and more recently, and I think a very exciting new initiative has been our move into Finland, where we've secured two tenements over lithium-bearing pegmatites. So well diversified, and we've got developed a very exciting pipeline of near development through to greenfields exploration projects.
Marvellous. Well, the RNS out today announced that you quite excitedly made some board appointments. Can you take us through these, please, David?
Sure. Well, it follows on from the investment by the Almarjan Group in February this year of £1.7 million in cash, which takes the Almarjan Group to be our largest shareholder at 29.9%. Both Mr. Makbul Sultan and Mr. Imad Sultan are members of the Sultan family, and they joined our board yesterday. And very pleased to have them on our board. Both of them are very influential individuals in Oman, and they're part of the Sultan family, which is probably one of the most respected and largest privately owned groups in Oman, with interests in engineering, construction, car importing, and they have a real blue chip list of partners, including such companies as Nestle, Unilever, and Mazda. So really a terrific a set of appointments with the two Sultan family members coming on the board.
Yeah, so it seems like you've got really two well-connected, you know, well-financed, well-heeled guys here who believe in the Savannah Resources project in Oman.
That's exactly right. And they are also the WJ Tal Group is a shareholder in Althuraya, which is the owner of the Block 4 copper tenement in Oman, in which we're earning up to a 65% interest. So the WJ Tal Group is effectively one of our joint venture partners as well. So it all sort of locks in very sort of logically. And I think our combination with the Sultan family in this way, I think is very sort of significant and will very much help take us forward through into production, copper production later this year, and I'm sure we'll really underscore the sort of continuing success that we've been enjoying in the country.
Yeah, so you basically you answered my next question there. I was going to ask you, where are you with Oman? So you're saying production later this year, is that right?
Sorry, late in 2017.
Oh, right, yes. I was going to say, I thought then you'd, wow, you'd fast-track that one.
indeed, sorry.
Okay, yeah. So late 2017, copper production in Oman. What about Mozambique? Where are we with that?
Yeah, well, we have a signed arrangement with Rio Tinto for the combination of our Jangamo and their Mutamba heavy mineral sands deposits in Mozambique. We announced that halfway through last year. The deal is subject to the approval of the Mozambican government, and we're working with the government now to secure that approval, and we think we're now getting very sort of close to that being resolved. So once we have the formal go-ahead from the government, we're very sort of keen on getting on the ground there and undertaking further drilling and highlighting the fact that there are large, high-grade resources of heavy mineral sands. The important thing also to note about this at the time is that heavy mineral sands prices are actually improving, particularly as we're sort of seeing continued growth in the U.S. economy. And, you know, the U.S. is a big consumer of paints, papers and plastics, so that'll sort of lend, that's a real support to the heavy mineral sands price and the overall investment proposition for Savannah.
Excellent stuff. And just an update on the Finland, I mean, you have two permits over areas of lithium projects there. How is that going and where are you with that?
Yep, still early stage greenfields projects, but the good thing is with both of our projects, there are obvious outcropping pegmatites which host lithium bearing minerals. So we think that's very sort of promising. The good news is that we'll be able to get onto the ground pretty shortly and start rock chip sampling and mapping. So we'll start to be able to define both grades that might be present there in terms of lithium grades, and also be able to sort of scope out the size of these pegmatite deposits, sort of walk them out and hopefully be able to sort of shape these pegmatites up into mineral resources with drilling later this year.
Okay, and I see you have quite a few, you know, sort of loyal fan base or shareholders. In fact, some of them are fans, and I see the interaction again on Twitter and on Vox Markets there when I mention Savannah Resources. So, I mean, you know, and a lot of people are convinced you are going to be a big thing. So what is your ambition there for the company, David? Where do you want to take Savannah Resources?
Well, certainly into production in the short term, sort of self-sufficient financially, but a company of real substance and scale, and demonstrably successful in the three jurisdictions in which we're sort of operating. So do have big ambitions. I think today's appointments do sort of demonstrate that we have very sort of different characteristics to most of the AIM companies. And I think one of the other differing characteristics is that we have a very sort of loyal shareholder group behind us. And we have a very tight register, sort of clearly with the Almarjan Group in there with just under a 30% shareholding, and then a series of private client investors both here in the UK and in Sweden, who probably speak for another 15%, and then board members as well, who probably probably speak for about 5 or 6%. So something like 50% of the register is pretty tightly locked down. And with the balance of the register, that sort of comprises quite a number of private client investors who've been following us for the long term and have been very sort of pleased to sort of see our recent sort of share price growth and the demonstrable maturing of our initiatives here in Oman and new initiatives in Finland, and hopefully we'll sort of see some real traction in Mozambique in coming weeks as well. So plenty to keep everyone excited, plenty to keep everyone interested, and certainly I think the next 6 months will be a very exciting time for the company.
Yeah, well, it seems you yourself as well endear a lot of loyalty. What do you put that down to?
I think, you know, communicating with shareholders, I really do believe that it's a partnership. Successful companies comprise three things: good assets, good management, and good shareholders. Too many companies ignore the latter part.
Okay, marvellous. Well, David, if anyone needs any more convincing to put Savannah Resources on their Vox Markets watch list, could you give us three sort of bullet points, please?
Yep, I think lots of excitement from drilling that's underway in Oman at the moment. Hopefully, we'll work our way to a Mozambique government approval in coming weeks. And finally, we'll be on the ground in Finland in coming weeks, and that will provide a further third stream of news to keep everyone interested.
Thank you very much, David, and look forward to speaking to you again very soon.
Okay, thanks, Justin. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Eric Hinau, Chief Executive Officer of Concepta, and that is CPT. Now, Eric, a lot of people may not have heard of Concepta, but first and foremost, thank you for coming on the podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Now, let's explain. Concepta was Frontier Resources, wasn't it?
Yes, Frontier Resources is the company that accepted, acquired Concepta, yeah, Diagnostics, and the name change has gone to Concepta PLC.
Okay, and it's was helped with Adam Reynolds, who's been on the podcast before. Could you explain, please, Eric, what Concepta is all about?
Yes, Concepta is a company that's involved in women's health, more specifically with fertility issues, and within that, the area of unexplained infertility. So that is women that have tried for a certain period of time to become pregnant without success. They go to the doctors, doctors can't tell them what's wrong with them, and they're told to wait. So they have a very frustrating period of time before they get pregnant, or they don't and have to resolve like things that, like IVF. Now, that's quite a considerable group we're talking about. In any sort of group of women, about 70% will be pregnant after 6 months. Then there's a long trail from 6 months to 3 years and longer before the other 30% becomes pregnant. And that's a considerable group that we are trying to help.
Okay, and what do you know the size of this group and the potential here?
Yes. Now, we spent a lot of time looking at demographics, etc., but there's a rule of thumb that in any given market, for every million people in the total population, 3,500 women fall into our category.
I see. Going forward, where are we with your product and how does it help? Can you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, the product has been developed. It's a meter together with urine tests, quite a traditional way of doing testing, so we don't have to educate women in how to do these things. And also a mobile app that tracks your results, allows the woman to check one cycle versus another. And those products have been developed. Now, there are other products on the market. People say pregnancy test, ovulation test, what's new? Those tests have all been based on the average woman. So you have thresholds and you're above or below that threshold. But the average woman covers about 44% of all women. We are addressing women that have issues and that by definition are not the average woman. So we've developed a test that also measures a woman's personal concentration of these fertility hormones. So they can now track what their own level is, see what's normal for them, and for the first time, some of these women will be able to check what their ovulation time is and period is. And that is very important for this group because you can only get pregnant on 2 days in your cycle, and determining when those days are determine when they should have intercourse and when they have the more likelihood of getting pregnant. So rather than the current plus minus tests, we allow these women to check their own personal levels.
Okay, so they do it themselves. So essentially, what is your product? Is it the app, or is it the, you know, or the testing side of it, the urine testing?
We combine both, so that's where we enter the mobile health market, which is a big emerging category in healthcare nowadays. And you use a meter and the tests to get the results. The app allows you to store the results and gives you feedback either to yourself or to your doctor, because they can now check, are there any anomalies here? Are there things that they should be checking? For example, you have a baseline and the tests detect a surge. A surge indicates when you're likely to ovulate. Now, women with a very low baseline have an issue to detect when that surge is with normal tests. Their surge may not even reach the level that is normal for the average woman. So with our tests, they're now able to do so. If, on the other hand, that baseline is very, very high, now that usually indicates that there's a very low likelihood they'll get pregnant in that cycle. And IVF, for example, can be seen as a competitor to our test, because ultimately women may want to move to IVF rather than use products to test. But with a very high LH level, so that hormone level, IVF won't be successful in about 80% of cases. So we can see an application now also with IVF to, for example, screen women for a suitable cycle to do what is essentially a very expensive procedure.
I see. And as far as, you know, testing this out and getting regulatory approval, where are you in that cycle?
Yeah. One of the founder members was a previous Chinese general manager of the business quite a lot of us came from. We worked, a number of us, for the market leader in pregnancy and ovulation tests. And due to her contacts, we managed to get regulatory approval in China. So the products are registered with the Chinese FDA. So from that point of view, we are ready to commercialize there as our first market. CE marking has been started. That would allow us to sell in the UK and the EU. That requires some further tests to be done on stability data of the first production batches. So as soon as we start the production batches, we start that process, and the whole process of CE marking will take us about 9 months. So as soon as the deal is now done, we start this process, so in 9 months we expect to have CE marking and open up those markets too.
Okay, and I see here the acquisition presents an attractive market opportunity to capitalise on the Chinese and EU. Now it says here, revenue potential worth 600 million. Is that the entire market or to yourself? Or what?
We look at end user prices for both the Chinese market and the EU market. For China, we brought that down by looking only at the middle class section, which we assume will be able to afford it. Although even the top end of the non-middle class could afford our product. So it's based on our potential revenue, but at the lower end.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. Marvellous. Well, listen, Eric, if anyone needs any further convincing as to why they should put Conceptor on their watch list, on their Vox Markets watch list? Could you give us three bullet points, please?
Yes. Well, as a startup company, we've gone very far in the sense that we have a unique product proposition for a market that is very motivated. So our target group is very motivated for this type of product. They're relatively easy to reach, so the marketing costs are much lower than a normal OTC launch. The products we have in the pipeline are equally unique and very interesting, talking about differentiating chronic stress from acute stress, which in itself is a huge potential. But all the products we have in the pipeline add to the proposition we make to women with unexplained infertility, because stress affects both the male and the female. So that product will also bring the male into this proposition and open the market wider. And further products in the pipeline, looking at urinary tract infections, which is a big issue for doctors and women alike, because there's no real solution there. And chronic inflammation. So we have a number of very interesting products in the pipeline that would all make use of the same meter. Ultimately, further down the line, this same meter could be used by members of the household, where each individual member decides what they want to track in terms of their personal healthcare parameters. They just use the tests they want. The meter recognizes the user, will recognize what test is being used, will send the results to their mobile phone, so you can keep track of things that are of particular interest to yourself. That's the ultimate vision for what we have developed. Our expertise as a management team comes from fertility, so that remains our focus, and we'll make that into a viable business before we roll out into other business opportunities.
Marvellous. Well, Eric, I think you've given us enough to go on there, and it's good stuff. So, Eric, thank you very much for talking to us, and please come on again real soon.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, financial analyst at Spreadex. Thanks for coming back on, Connor.
No worries.
Now, before we look at what significant data we're looking at this week that should affect the markets, so far this week, what has happened? Have we seen any movement on the, as we all know, Westminster's been very exciting for the first time ever, I think, in political history. We've sort of engaged almost younger people, this referendum vote. And now yesterday we saw, Andrew led some stand down. What happened, if anything, Connor?
Well, it's meant to be a very quiet start to the week, and nothing's really in focus till Thursday or Friday. However, then on Monday afternoon, you've got Andrea Leadsom come out, remove herself from the Tory leadership bid. These Theresa May as a de facto prime minister, likely in the coming days she'll be cemented as, our new leader. And that saw a very noticeable reaction from the markets, especially the FTSE and the pound. The pound on Monday afternoon had been struggling at 4.5% against the dollar and the euro. The May led some news comes out and it's, back flat against the euro and crept slightly high against the dollar. Ditto the FTSE. The FTSE had on Monday morning teased 11-month highs. The May led some news comes out. Now it's cemented those 11-month highs. It's pushing 6,650, definite 2016 highs and, approaching the 11-month highs it had seen during the day. So a very clear reaction from the markets in terms of May, A, clearly being the market's preferred choice due to experience and a less contentious relationship with the EU, and probably primarily the fact that she isn't in any rush to activate Article 50, where, Leadsom had stated that she would do it almost immediately. And then in general, just that, now the UK has a government back, really, from what were very fractured scenes for the Tory party a fortnight ago. You've now got the party largely rallying around Theresa May and cementing a fairly, unified position from the Tory party, something that is in stark contrast to what we saw a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so we've seen, like I said, that announcement there strengthen the pound a little. Now, towards the end of this week, we may see it weaken again, mightn't we?
Yes, I think the strengthen is all relative at the moment with the pound. Strengthen still means it's struggling around 1.3 against the dollar and around the 1.17 mark against the euro. And the reason it seems to be struggling to break those levels is because on Thursday we have the Bank of England rate vote. Many analysts, and I think the markets in general, are expecting a cut from 0.5% to 0.25% in the headline interest rate, and, you know, potentially even 0%. Even 0.25% would be another record low in the history of the, you know, Bank of England and interest rates. So that is what the pound is worried about at the moment, and that is what is capping any potential rebound is capped at those levels. Obviously, if the Bank of England don't announce a rate cut on Thursday, then the pound could strengthen further, just in relief of the fact that the Bank of England for now hasn't announced any measures. However, if it does, you've seen analysts say that it could fall to, you know, 1.26, 1.25 against the dollar, you know, pushing it back on the path towards parity, dependent on how long rates stay that low, what the Bank of England's plan is for the coming month. Obviously, then at a very extreme, if the Bank of England announces quantitative easing, another round of, you know, quantitative easing, that would be a whole different world of a nightmare for the pound, really, and that could really see the pound plunge once again. So Thursday, undoubtedly, is the focus, is arguably the most important date in the past 2-3 weeks since the referendum results itself. It'll be the first truly clear sign of what the Bank of England intends to do going forwards. Obviously, we've seen statements from Carney and etc. discussing their commitment to, you know, providing liquidity for the markets, providing liquidity for the banks, ensuring that people can still borrow money, ensuring the banks are still lending money. However, this will be the first concrete action really taken by the bank on Thursday that could cause real widespread movement across the market.
Yes, at midday Thursday is all eyes are on that. And, well, I don't get, though. Why are they moving? Is it based on data, or is it just the fears of sentiment or anecdotal evidence there's less investment? I mean, we don't know this, do we?
Why are the Bank of England moving?
Yeah. I mean, there's anecdotal evidence that there's less investment going on, but is there firm data showing the economy slowing down? What's happening here?
I think this is the issue some quarters have had with the potential for this rate cut, but, you know, we're barely out of the woods of the immediate referendum aftermath here, and there's no concrete data. You've seen, you know, obviously it's the start of earnings season, you've seen plenty of companies explicitly state that it's too early to tell what the Brexit is going to have, how it's going to have an effect long term. The Bank of England probably has a slightly better idea in terms of the wider economy, and we've seen, you know, services PMIs or construction PMI more clearly suffer in the run-up to the referendum, which might give, you know, the Bank of England some idea of how things are going to pan out going forwards. But you're correct, there isn't going to be a wealth of data showing the firm aftermath, really, beyond the market movements. And as you've seen, the market movements, the discrepancy between the FTSE 100 and FTSE 250 shows there is still clear, you know, a clear lack of clarity around the whole issue.
Yeah, because I hold house builders. Sorry, but I own Persimmon. I bought some recently, and them and Bovis and all the house builders that come out saying the same thing. It's way too early yet to find out whether Brexit has had any, you know, material impact on their earnings going forward. But even so, I saw another. I think it was Chartered Institute of Surveyors saying, pretty much mortgages going ahead as normal, you know? No one's really pulling out. So it's hard to say. Do you know what's annoying for me if they do reduce the interest rate? Literally 2 months ago, I fixed my interest rate for 5 years. It's bound to go up. And now it's going back down. It's nuts. I'm absolutely crazy. You know, everyone would, this time last year, everyone would have predicted we'd now be in an environment of higher interest rates, probably. And it's looking like not only are we not going there, we're going in the opposite direction. It's quite a scary place to be at the moment, I think, isn't it?
Exactly. Even in the US, if you look at US interest rates, you know, the Federal Reserve was all set for, you know, another two perhaps interest rate rises this year. That seems to have been completely knocked on the head. I think this Brexit has had definite ramifications around the globe in terms of central banks having to adjust their policies slightly. How much they have to adjust going forward is, I think, the big question at the moment. And like I said, Thursday will provide the first clear insight, really, into the steps taken by the Bank of England in the coming months.
Marvellous. Connor, thank you very much. All eyes on Thursday, midday, and speak next week, fella.
See you next week.
OK, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Liam, and it's Union Jack All. I've had David Bramhill on the podcast many a time. Nice guy. UJO's ticker. What are the how many shares the company have an issue? 2.8 billion. What's the current price on market cap? It's 0.15 pence. Market cap 0.4.3 million. What profit or loss the company generate? Small profit at present. How much cash or debt does the company have? Cash, £2.3 million. No debt. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. One, has a great friendship with Egdon Resources. Two, Wrestle Well site, ready to start producing oil within the next few months. In brackets, 500 barrels a day plus. And three, has stakes in several drill-ready, low-risk prospects. Yeah, that's their modus operandi there. They farm into companies that are ready to drill pretty much. So all the risk is gone pretty much, apart from the drilling part. Of course, there's still risk there. But a very sensible sort of business model there. That's UJO. Check it out. And if you like that, put it on your watch list. Today's broker buys and sells are Smith & Nephew, Berenberg, buy. Price target, 14.85. Experian, Deutsche Bank, buy. £15.40 target. Entertainment One, JP Morgan, say it's a buy. Or they're, sorry, overweight. Oh, I'm a bit overweight. £2.36 target. BTG, Deutsche Bank has got a buy rating on that, £8.40. British American Tobacco, JP Morgan, they've gone for overweight. I like my fags as well. price target, £53.80. And finally, AstraZeneca, Berenberg. I've just sold those actually. Target price, £54. That's it for the podcast today. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, get involved. I need penny stocks with potential. That is nice content for other people to look at to do some research. And also don't forget, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on this podcast. It's only just advice or research. That's all it's for, okay? They're all investment ideas. Not every idea is a good one. How many ideas have you? I know personally, I've come up with loads of ideas in the past. Most of them are from the head of a dunder person. So, listen, it can turn out badly. So do your own research, please. Thank you for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.